Welcome to Salayan Filipino Spark Podcast. My name is Dr. Beverly Bionis-Pack, and my co-host is Miss Jeannie De Guzman. We are so excited about launching this first episode. It just takes a spark to ignite the world ablaze. And this first guest does this time and time again. Her name is Mrs. Arlie Ricasa Bugapora. So welcome, Arlie.
Thank you, Dr. Bev and Jeannie. Glad to be here with you all.
Yeah, we're glad to have you too. I know, Arlie, you are so involved and well connected to our community as well as your family because you guys are definitely involved and you contribute to a lot to our Filipino community. But with those that don't know you, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in Salayan Filipina?
Absolutely. So kind of a brief family history. My family immigrated here from the Philippines in the late 50s. My dad was a retired Navy man and my mom a school teacher. And we ended in the south end of San Diego or in Imperial Beach. And so me being the youngest, I'm the youngest of 10. My mom traveled here with seven siblings. And so three of us were born here in the United States after they arrived in the 50s. So really much of that involvement with the community, both in the Filipino American community, but the community at large, really came from my parents. My mom and dad were extremely, extremely active. They felt it was very important to have a connection for their kababayan from the Philippines. And so we saw at a very young age the importance of establishing community and interacting with mainstream community as well. And so that's, I believe, how we all got started. We all attended the same high school, Marvista High School, down in Imperial Beach, and went a lot of different ways. You know, some of us went on to college, some of us went right into the world of work. And I'm so fortunate that I've had my older siblings to really set the example and give me the chance to do what I do. And so I've been lucky. I've gotten my degree from UCLA and San Diego State, my graduate degree, and then married my college sweetie, Ed Bugapora, and together we're very fortunate. We have five beautiful, intelligent, feisty, and self-assured kids. And so, and they range from 15 to 24. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yes, I know. I know your parents and they were always the first to be involved in so many different things. They were pioneers of so many organizations. So yes, they were great role models. So yes.
Thank you.
And I do see your children doing the same, taking the lead of their parents, and it's being passed on to generations. So that is just wonderful to see. So I'm really
happy. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're here because I know this so well. March 13th, everything just shut down, COVID-19. Everybody was definitely confused. Everybody was lost. They were fearful. And that isolation even made it more pronounced and amplified. So I know, Arlie, you did a lot of things. I am a true believer of this, that sometimes in tragedies, you know, sparks opportunity. And can you tell me how you emerged from that and what was, you know, what made you do all the different things that you did during this time?
Well, I appreciate that acknowledgement. And I do want to, for those who are going to be listening to this, is that, you know, I can only speak to my perspective, but as a college counselor, which I work full time still, just doing it virtually, but as a college counselor and working with so many different students from various ranges, you know, ages from literally 17 to 50, 60 plus, you know, everyone experiences this pandemic and the closure of much of our social connectivity very differently. So I just wanted to put a little disclaimer to say that what I found that worked for me was something I had to really think about and assess as time went on. Because when we all shut down, like you said, it was very abrupt. You know, my workspace told me, you are not going to be coming in to work on Monday. And we all looked at each other like, we're not coming back to work. Yes, we're closing down. Then we get the notification from my kids who are in college as well in high school. And they also were told that they weren't going to be coming back to their campuses. And so this threw the whole family dynamic in a whole different way and a different perspective to work it. Because now we have 7 people all at home in one space.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, and we natural human beings, for me, I thrive off of that social connecting. And I'm an extrovert by personality, and I gain my energy from other people. But to have that 24/7, it could take you to a whole nother level. And so it was really, you know, I'd say a couple months into this where we're just trying to find our bearing. One, where's our space for each other? You know, where can we find some personal alone? I never really thought about that, you know, when we talk about 18 inches of personal space when you meet new people or when you're in a crowded room and you have that little bubble around you. Well, I think it was just as important that while we're at home, that we find where that little space could be so we individually could retreat, even though I like to believe, really do thrive and love each other, that we can laugh and joke and all of that. But sometimes you just need your space. And I think particularly for my teenagers and the young adults to be disconnected from their friends, from the physical disconnection, that was a toughie. So I had to start, we all did, but I had to start thinking in my head, how am I functioning? Because I think for parents and for those of you who are the adults in the house, or if you have, maybe you have your own parents in your house, right? You have multiple generations in your house. Much of the response your family gonna get is from you, right?
Right.
What you're giving off is really, people are reading that, and that even goes for your family. So it was not an easy transition, but like you said, I think in adversity, and this is something I live by, I absolutely live by, that you have to always find the silver lining in things, no right. matter how difficult, right. no matter how heartbreaking, how imposing, you need to find the silver lining, because there's always got to be hope. There always has to be the ability to say things will get better. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who coined the phrase, this too shall pass. It shall. It's taking a little longer than we thought.
Right?
Right. Yeah. So I think then it started to start breaking down some of the things I needed to do personally, because when you're at home and you're surrounded by the people you love, you also have to take the time to think about yourself. And if I could venture to say generationally within Filipino community and culture, we're very well-meaning, and we're taught to think of everybody, to take care of everybody. That's who we are and what we're brought up with, which will always be there. But then we tend to forget about ourselves.
Right. That's for sure.
Right. And so I made a real, real conscious effort to start thinking about myself. And I have to give credit to my eldest daughter, Natalie, because, and I don't know if it's the generation, but they really talk a lot about self-care. And that really, I believe, is a foreign concept for the Filipino culture. Because self-care is basically, I would have defined it as familial care, everybody.
Right.
So self-care, it almost sounded as it was being too individualized.
Right?
Selfish. Thank you. So yeah, you know, I just saw a formula in my brain. Self-care equals selfish.
Right.
And which is so funny because I'm a counselor by profession. And I talk to my students and work with them about taking care of themselves and what they need to do in order to be successful in their careers and their education. It's like, you know, sometimes you got to listen to your own advice. So right. That's really the focus of where I had a shift probably after the first 3-4 weeks and started thinking, I don't know how long this is going to be. So I better start doing some stuff that will help me be a better version of me so that I'm a better version for everybody else that I love and care for as well.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and you did it so well. What kind of things did you start incorporating to take care of yourself as well as your family?
You know what? A big piece was the mental component, right? The ability to have some free time in your thought and clarity. And one of the things that Ed, my husband, and I decided to undertake was to start a garden.
I remember the garden when everybody was so excited about, I have the seed.
Right. and I have to tell you, it didn't start off with just the garden. It was like our side yard was an absolute mess. So I know people who are listening to this podcast, I'm just going to free you up to say, just say what it is. You know, because we're so busy in our regular lives, between work, meetings, kids' activities, you know, just all kinds of the community work, a lot of stuff around us wasn't getting done. And my side yard was one of those, and it literally was just a mess. And so when we decided, because we weren't necessarily going to leave anywhere, we figured, well, let's start working on the yard. And as we started that process, it was like, okay, we can start a garden. This will be the very first time. And I will be happy if I could just grow one thing that I can just say I ate one thing and then I'll be happy for the rest. We did it.
Oh, right? Yeah. You guys were harvesting every day.
We were.
Yeah. And what's great is that it kind of rubbed off on us and it kind of trickled down to the rest of the family. So we were starting our own gardens because of you.
I have to agree. I mean, looking at Facebook and I saw everybody like, look what we did to our living room. And what did we do in our backyard? Right? And I'm like, and I would say to my husband, like, what are we doing? We better start doing something.
Guys just took off with it. I mean, you turned the COVID quarantine into something so positive.
That was the silver lining I started identifying. So Let me just take you back a little bit. So when COVID hit and we were all home, one of the biggest things that I take pleasure in is being able to cook and have time to cook. Yeah. And I really love the fact that I like to say I was mastering my mom's and dad's dishes that they made growing up. And so, you know, the thought, you know, food and taste is such a strong memory. And so I just loved it. So we're doing all kinds of stuff. And I was loving it. But at the same time, I was eating like I loved it too. So if you catch my drift, what I was doing is we're making, you know, kare kare, fresh lumpia, pancit,
and then
whatever.
Ed's bread with the carbs.
Exactly. Right. And so Ed started baking, you know, doing beignets. He made fresh dough for pizza. We were having pizza night. So it was wonderful because we're all around it. My daughter, Elena, started baking just phenomenal things. And it was just a real comforting thing. I think many of us find comfort in food. Right. Here's where it got real for me. My clothes weren't fitting. So I knew I started to put on that coat, the COVID, whatever, fill in the blank for everybody. And I also, and this is where I want to get real with people, is that, you know, I have many of the typical, stereotypical, traditional ailments that other Filipinos do. And so when I say that, I'm talking about the hypertension, the diabetes, the high cholesterol, all those things that I've been, you know, maintaining on my medication and doing okay, but not having the ability to go out and run around, you know, like traveling from place to place and take my mind off of what's just happening in the kitchen was not a good thing for me. It was not a good thing for me. And so that was the other situation that pushed me in my brain to say, let's start eating better. You know, right. And part of that was really developing this garden to have accessible, fresh vegetables and whatever in the garden that I can use without having to rush over to the grocery store and go down the chips aisle or right. or the cookie aisle. Yes. And, you know, in that, I'm just being real. And if anyone ever feels like that, I get it. I get it. So I needed to go back and start thinking of self-care. So part of that was the physical and the mental. And I started incorporating eating better. I have a dear friend, her name's Amma, and she shared with me, she is feeling the same, she has the same ailments as I do. And she shared with me a journey that she started taking to becoming more healthy in her entire life. And I said, I need to do this because now's the time. I'm not getting younger. I like to think I look young,
you
but I'm
do.
Not getting
You look amazing.
Thank you.
Hey, Marley.
Oh, thank you. But you know, it's those years start coming up and I said, you know what? I want to have a more optimal health. I want to have a more optimal life. Because my biggest why is because I have my family and I have my kids and I have my extended family that I want to be here for a long time.
Right. And so, that trifecta that you talked about, Filipinos, puts us at high risk for COVID. So we really need to retain that and just try to alleviate ourselves of those ailments. So you're right on track with that.
Right. So the ability to maybe this lifestyle change that I'm doing is going to allow me to reduce my medications or get off medications, so on and so forth. So in that realm, over this time, over the several months that have been going by, I really have been able to incorporate those things. I'm thankful and I'll give myself the pat on the back because I've got a lot of support. Because of how I changed my eating habits and what we're doing, I'm down 25 pounds from when COVID started this summer.
Thank you.
And that's a huge, actually, I think I was heavier, but I started thinking about things. But June 1st, I made a real conscious decision to start doing some real serious change. So, you know, I'm excited. Now I'm okay to go visit my doctor. Right. And have them read my labs and go, oh, you're looking great. So I'm reducing medications. I'm knocking on wood. The next go around, I'm going to be off of a couple. I'm already off of one. So I'm like,
that's awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing thing. And the other thing that I know I sent to my family, we have this family thread that we talk every morning. And I am routine. I am clockwork. I am out the door by 6:30, 6:15 in the morning, and I'm running or walking 2.5-3 miles a day.
That is amazing.
What an inspiration there, Arlie.
It is.
You know,
me.
Thank you. And you know, the thing is what I found, that ability to have that quiet time in the morning when, and I was never a morning person. I've always since high school through college, it's been, let me stay up till 2-3 in the morning. I'll get up whenever.
Yeah.
Having kids changed that, but this COVID, I never would have ever thought about getting up before the sun rose. and then going and running around, you know, for a couple miles around the neighborhood. And I'm like, who is this?
Right. And you started off
walking a mile. If I could do a mile, I was happy.
Wow.
Right.
That's great.
Right.
And now you are running. You're actually running the entire time.
Thank you. And that, so not only am I getting that physical activity, but really, like I said, that sometimes you need that mental space. And that's what I use as my alone time for just to clear out my brain.
Right.
And you know, there's nothing around me. There's a few cars, and maybe two other walkers, some older gentlemen who are walking the neighborhood. We say good morning.
I was going to ask this question because what you said is that this generation is so good about their self-care and to we do something different to raise our children to feel like that's important? Because I just want to go back to your mental. How did your mental change happen? Like, how did that happen for you? Like, because we're that generation that our parents kept on telling us, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. And how do we do something different that our kids are now teaching us? Hey, you need to do self-care for yourself. Like, how did that happen for you? Like,
for me, I think the extra benefit was that I work with college-age students. So I work with college-age students, and I have college-age children and high school children who I'd like to say we're not afraid to have those kinds of conversations. I like to think that my husband and I are open-minded enough to have the kinds of conversations that they are having with their own peers, but also when it comes down to what do they need. And I believe because we're constantly working and doing the grind as parents or as the adults, that we don't stop to smell the roses. We don't take that time to really just think about what is it that can make you happy without it thinking very selfishly. And like I said, that's a big mind shift. It's a paradigm shift and a mindset. That's what I want to say. It's a paradigm shift and a mindset that I've had to change, you know, and to not have the mommy guilt if I want to do something, because I know I still love and I'm not neglecting and we're doing things that are fun. But watching them, like getting back to what you said, what are we doing differently? I think if we're open enough to hear and listen to our young folks, and exactly. And that's a key thing, because I, as an educator, I say this to my students all the time. I never stop learning from you or from them.
Right.
And that's an important thing to know, because once I feel, or anyone feels, oh, I've got it all in the bag, I got this held down tight, I know what's going on, then you know what? You stop your growth.
Right.
And if I had that mentality, let me wind it back. If I didn't change that mentality,
right,
it would have been almost impossible for me to do the things I do. So by having a garden, working around the house, running, you know, where I never wanted to exercise. I told a story to my family. In junior high, and Bev, you may remember this, we had to run a mile every Friday, right? And they pass out the popsicle stick, you know, whatever your number was that you came in. At least they did when we were running in the 70s, right? And I hated it so much that I would ask my coach, Coach Wonderly or Coach McCoy, I'll pass out the sticks for you. I'll keep records of everyone's pace. And they go, okay, Arlie, you do that, you know? And finally, my coach said,
hard, Arlie.
He goes, you got to do it at least once in the semester, Arlie. Just run once. And I'm like, God darn it. And so that like sticks in my head that right. If I don't change that, I can do certain things, that it's okay to get out of the comfort zone and listen to people who are younger than you.
Yeah.
Right.
And appreciate them. Those of you who are taking care of your elderly parents, and I know you, all of us are, right? And I know
right.
Bev and Jeannie, you are as well, that, you know, they have so much to teach us.
They do.
Right? Right? They have so much to teach us. And one more example. My comadre up in Los Angeles, her mother is 96 years old.
Wow.
And she has very good mind and thought and no typical Filipino ailments of hypertension, diabetes, none of that.
Wow.
And I ask her, I go, Auntie, when I grow up, I want to be just like you. What's the secret? Mm-hmm. And so this is what I take to heart. And I hope it comes through with this podcast, is reduce the stress in your life. And she says, Arlie, I don't stress about things. You know, I've lived a long time. I've raised my children and my grandchildren. They're doing fine. I need to just enjoy. So she loves to dance. Of course, she loves to play bingo. She loves to sing. She loves to take pictures, you know? And I go, wow, you know what? That is the key. The less stress in our lives, the better. And if that means building a garden, walking a mile, eating good foods that are healthy for your long term, then why not make those changes? Because now for me was the time.
Right.
Now was the time. I'm not going back to my office until June, they say.
What?
Who knows, maybe a lot. Yes. I'm not going back to my office. My kids are not going back to their campuses. I have kids that are graduating from college and high school. They haven't been on their campuses all year. So all the more reason it's important for us to think about what are the things I can do to become healthy of mind, spirit, and body. And I think that that's really what's helped me.
Yeah, I listened recently to an Audible book called Blueprints, and it basically was looking at areas that have longevity. And everything you talked about, they're saying Okinawa, Japan, was one of those places. And what they said was exactly what you said. It's less stress, right foods, a little bit of exercise. They said belong to a community and have some sort of faith base. That was the five things they said really causes longevity. So
that
you touched all of that.
I couldn't agree more. And I think part of the challenge that we have here in the United States, and I think in this generation, is that, or of our generation, one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, we're taught to work hard in order to be successful. And I think people have really developed wonderful work ethics. But I also see that what we've been taught to believe is that there's certain trappings in life that I think people feel they have to have. And it's okay if you want certain things and aspire to get certain things and to be at certain levels. And I think that that's all fine. But when it overcomes you in your mental and your physical well-being, that's the warning. So it's like, whoa, back up.
When it causes stress, when it causes negativity, it's not.
When you're not at peace, right?
You were not at peace. And everyone who you come in contact with, right? Your spouses, your partners, your children, your parents, when they start feeling, remember I talked about the feeling of something and the stress is going on. Those of us who have animals, they can feel when something's going on with us. That happens with our loved ones. And again, how can we be the best people that we want to be if we're constantly just jumping on that wheel and going and going and going? It takes some time to be able to stop and slow it down. So someone, whoever developed, again, that saying, stop and smell the roses. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Appreciate things.
Appreciate them. Do things that take your ability to not have to stress on everything day to day. Do a little activity, you know, even if it's just walking around the block. And literally, that was me starting off. Let me just walk around the block, you know. I used to have knee problems. I don't have knee problems anymore, you know, and that's part of the weight loss, but also because, you know, I'm trying to connect. And I think the other piece, as you mentioned, that fifth part, you know, with the studies from Okinawa and stuff, but having a strong faith, my own faith, I have to believe. And I believe that we're in this time period in order to reconnect.
Right.
And so, yes, that's what I'm working on doing. It's definitely something that needs continued acknowledgement and continued practice. Everything that I'm doing, it's every day I have to be mindful of it, you know, and that's what helps. That definitely
that's
is what
awesome.
Helps.
And the outcome of this, when everything comes back to normal, you still carry on everything that you picked up from being quarantined, things that you started, your health, the way you eat is going to be constant.
Sometimes I do think that, you know, me of faith too. Sometimes I think God has put this in our life.
Right.
Like a pause to reset and pivot our mindset because we were on that little mouse treadmill constantly going. I saw my kids like go in and out of my house. But look, we're now sitting down for dinner, having those conversations. And I remember reading your post, Arlie, where you said, I'm teaching the traditions to my children. I said, wow, yeah, this is a time to teach traditions, teach about our culture, because we never had time for that. They were in and out of our house. So
Exactly. And that it allows us as humans, and whatever anyone's spiritual or faith belief is, the ability to know as people, as humans, we have choices that we make.
Right.
And so the choices for me became very simplified over these months. Is that, do I want to have a healthy life? Do I want to live long and healthy for my kids so I can see them continue to go through their own journeys in life? Or do I want to dwell on the negativism? And believe me, I it's a dark place, you know, when I get there, because there's so much around us that is so negative right now that I constantly, you know, I move that and put it right in my head and say, no, I'm not going to let that engulf me. I may engage in the moment and all that, but I don't want to, quote unquote, bring it home. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the choices we make. And that's where we all have to find our silver lining in this adversity and the pandemic. And again, like I said, regardless of what people's beliefs are, that they find their truth in what they can do to be happy in this time, to make the relational connections that maybe got a little lost in having to work 40, 50, 60 hours.
Right.
You know, and you know, all those things. It's nice to have beautiful things. It's nicer to have the ones that love you, love you.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Exactly.
Sure. I just want to ask one other question, because you are a counselor and you have been talking to students during all of this. Where are they today? Like, where do you think they are? Are they adapting to this? Are you seeing them, those that are always been like a little bit an introvert, are they going more into that, you know, because sometimes being out into normal, it kind of normalizes, so that introvert, it gets exposed to the extroverts, and is the extroverts kind of having a hard time with this, you know, like, you know, being isolated. What are you hearing now? Like, how are kids adapting right now?
Well, again, this is not a study by any means, but the people that I've been working with every day, it's a struggle. It's a struggle. And I have to tell you that they're trying to find their way. I think there's a great assumption that, you know, because this generation knows technology or has more involvement with technology, I think people assume that, oh, they must be just fine with this distance learning and remote learning and so on and so forth. Even those who were the A students prior to COVID, they're struggling.
Wow.
Because there's not the connection. Everyone's getting zoomed out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the ability, and as a counselor, but also as a professor, when I'm teaching, I need that connection with my students. So when I see them in the day, you know, that they feel, I can feel what's happening going through. This is, you know, two-dimensional. You can't feel that vibe. And so some are doing fine. Some prefer this mode. But I have to say, and this is just me, you know, I'm not a therapist or anything, but I don't think we're going to know the true impact of being isolated like this is going to have for some of those folks who are more in that ability to gain depression and anxiety and all those kinds of things, because there is no interaction. That's why it's finding the things. And I talk with my students all the time, finding the moments in the day to get out of your room, walk away from the computer screen, get outside, breathe some fresh air. I mean, I know you're not, I know you're not driving anywhere, but get a change of environment because they need that. So not only my students, but as my colleagues, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit, you know, I got to a point when I'm learning new technology, I'm trying to adjust to this environment. And I was literally, there's a day I go, I'm through, I'm done. I don't talk to me. I'll talk to y'all on Monday. And I'm not like that. Usually I'm like, okay, good. We're wrapping it up. Yeah. But it was getting to me too. And that's why those pieces, when you have to be mindful, you have to know and admit to yourself, okay, I need to step back. I need to take a breath. And so we all do, not just our students, not just our kids, but we all, the adults, the parents, the, you know, we multi-generation households, finding those opportunities to get a breather.
Right. That's great advice.
Yeah. Are you like steering people? I mean, you're giving them advice. Are you steering people for help, or is it, you know?
No, absolutely. And believe me, we, you know, there's people we talk to who I've talked to who are not only struggling academically, they're struggling financially. They are some not in the most of safest situations in their home lives. And so, yes, in terms of community referrals, social service agencies, we have a really strong network of people at the college who are phenomenal. And they're working with students daily to find resources for them, whether it is food insecurity, homelessness, domestic abuse. All, you know, unfortunately, those are also impacted and heightened in this environment. And so that's why I said from the very beginning, when I started out, this is from my experience, and the things I've done worked for me. But I would hope that if you're yourselves or someone else that they know is struggling with anything, don't hesitate to reach out, because this is not normal.
No, this is not by any means.
Right?
This is not a normal life.
This is not normal. And it's okay. It's okay to reach out. It's okay to say you need help. Some of the people who I think are the most visually in person, you may think they got it all together.
Right.
They're good. You don't know.
At that, actually.
Yes, we are. And I admit those are, because I'm like, I want everyone to feel good and all that. But you know, that's when I said, sometimes you got to stop and be real with yourself. I got a messy side yard. It's okay to say you got a messy side yard. You know, it's okay if my living room has stuff like strewn all over the place. It's okay. Yeah. You know, maybe 20 years ago, I wouldn't have said that, you know, as a little OCD. An anal retentive, I admit it. But this environment really causes you to stop. I would hope people will stop, find something that they can but identify with, that can help them have some of their own space. So rather than saying self-care equals selfishness, self-care equals self-love, right?
Right.
It's okay to love yourself. You know, we don't learn that growing up in our not because they don't want you to, our culture, it's just that we're always giving of to others.
Yeah, we're all other centric always.
That's in our culture.
Yes.
You know, it is, we were raised that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful for it. I'm so thankful for it. But we need to find balance, right? Mm-hmm. And for us to be able to do that as we go on our day to day. Yeah. Like I said, normal, I don't know what normal is going to be when we come out of this. Right.
Right.
I think masks are going to be normal. I think making sure there's distance between us is going to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of us being able to make some choices about wanting to live life to the fullest, wanting to have a healthy, optimal life, you know, is things we need to really aspire to. We really need to aspire to.
Well, this has been great, Arlie, but just one last question for you. And so here it is. What advice can you give to someone to create their spark in this world?
That's a great question. Part of that, I think, is the introspection. You have to be willing. This isn't easy. You have to be willing to look at yourself.
I love it.
A lot of times we look to our partners, our children. You know, we have all of our titles or labels of who we are. My thing would be to say, who are you to you?
Yeah.
And if we can be a little more introspective, maybe that'll allow everyone to find that space to say what it is they would like to see in themselves come out. The love of the ability to play a musical instrument. The love of wanting to learn how to make something crochet. I don't know. It could be anything like that. But if that's the ability for them to look into themselves, that they can find it, I say have at it. Allow it.
Perfect. Thank you, Miss Arlie.
Thank you.
Arlie, with everything that you've done within these last few months, you are such an inspiration.
Oh, thank you. Well, I appreciate you both and for giving me this opportunity. And the last thing I'd just like to say, anyone who listens to this, any of the Celion sisters or anybody else who is afraid of reaching out to someone, know that I'm available, that I know within the organization, the women of Celion are phenomenal. So if anyone ever wants to talk about finding that voice and that spark in themselves, definitely you can contact me. I'm here, not like I'm going anywhere, but I'm here and I'd love to have those conversations with anyone. So thank you both for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you for being inspiring to me always, Arlie. So thank you.
Yay.